And we're back with episode 13 of the Guardian Project podcast. I'm your host, Andy Flory, and I am adamant that I will like Throne of Eldraine.
That's so good.
I know.
And I'm Brian Luthad, and I'm back after 2 weeks, 3 weeks.
3 weeks.
3 weeks. It feels so good to be back. And I, when I'm playing Commander, you can call me John Avon because all I do is draw lands.
That's really, actually, I would prefer to use John Avon lands in all my decks.
I would too, but they're not in Japanese, so.
And you are now a married man.
I am a married man.
Please listen carefully.
And this is the podcast where we talk about all things Magic the Gathering.
Mostly.
But before we go ahead and start, we want to thank our listeners. We wouldn't be here without you, and we appreciate all of your engagement. We've been getting a lot of comments and suggestions for things to talk about, but before we do that, let's circle back to your wedding. Because I was there, and some of you may have seen some photos of it on Twitter. Yep. Brian posted a few. I think I posted a few as well. Yep. It was a nice wedding, yep. And let's hear about it. How were you nervous?
No, not at all. I think leading up to the ceremony, I was just like, let's get this over with because I want to party. Which is kind of selfish, but you know. No, everything went very smooth, and I was not nervous. I know Angela was. She started crying during the nuptials.
I didn't cry. I cry at every wedding, but I was like, no, just look at the floor. Just look at the floor.
Just look at the AT floor.
AT floor. Yeah, no, I did not. I didn't cry, but I was a little stressed. I think your wedding party, we took on a little bit of stress because we're like, oh my God, how are we going to make it downtown? Take photos.
Oh, get back. you were a little. I think everybody was just stressed that day, but that comes with wedding. I think you were a little stressed with the shoes because you're like.
I got my shoes for Brian's wedding literally minutes before the party bus picked us up to go to the wedding.
Yep.
I did not have shoes. I tried my shoes on for the first time about an hour before your wedding. I was like, well, yep. I hope these fit.
Yeah.
Because if not, we're cramming our feet right into them and we're going for it, guys.
Well, that's fine because I didn't know how to tie my shoes. I was like, my brother, who is like my backup best man, if you will, he's like, I'm, you know, responsible. I know how to tie dress shoes. I'm like, hey, come on, big brother, help me out here.
To be fair, I've never seen a shoe tied that way. And when I had to lace up my own shoes, because the shoes we got they weren't laced. I was like, wait, are you going over here? What are we doing here?
Yeah.
I felt really lost and I was just trying to tie my shoes. They ended up looking good, but I think my favorite part of your wedding, one of my favorite parts was that, so Brian is actually Hawaiian, and his aunt Bobby came in from Hawaii, and she made leis for everybody to wear, ceremonial leis. Yeah. Those were really cool. They smelled really good, and a lot of us were really hungry, and we were like, oh, I could just nibble on this. It's like a little salad. I don't know what they were. What were they made out of again?
So they were made out of...
Yours had ginger in it because you were like the groom had it. You had a fancy leg.
Yeah, we were ginger. Most of them were, I think they're called Molly. So they like wrap around and they're kind of like go down to like your, you know, like your thighs.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember what those were made out of, but most of them were ginger and like tuberose, which is like a, I think, or maybe that
is it
ginger.
Native? Is that native to Hawaii? I don't know. They were really pretty and they smelled really good though.
Yeah, no, I don't think those are native to Hawaii, but they are definitely a Pacific flower. So,
okay.
Yeah. She had like four different designs. I mean, there's literally hundreds of different lei designs that you can do. They do it in all native Pacific cultures. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Thank you, Aunt Bobby, for that very much. I mean, she did
so
much.
I bet Aunt Bobby listens to our magic podcast.
Probably. Clearly, she spends...
I know it. Shout out to Aunt Bobby.
Shout out to Aunt Bobby, that's right. Shout out to Uncle Tim. He did a lot of work, too.
Does Uncle Tim listen to our podcast?
No. Literally no one from Angela's family listens to the podcast. They have better stuff to do.
They don't understand magic.
Yeah.
They just don't understand us.
What a bunch of buttholes.
No.
Negate. Counterspell. Hopefully they listen to at least this first five minutes where I'm thanking everybody.
You could just ask them to.
I could.
We're on Spotify. That's an easy one to find. Or if they have an iPhone, it's real easy because it comes already on their phone. Yeah, they can just find it.
Yeah. iPhone hello.
iPhone hello. Ooh. Well, I have an iPhone.
Hello, Moto.
You have an iPhone as well.
I do.
Because you know how to pick a phone.
I know how to party.
Do you have an iPhone, producer? Oh, He doesn't have an iPhone.
That's all right.
Yeah, well.
He drinks all his coffee like a man.
He put Splenda in it, right? Yeah, he just winked. He put Splenda. That's not black coffee. See, last week we talked about how we take our coffee.
Oh, I take it all sorts except for black because I'm...
You don't like the black coffee.
No.
It's see, Coyle really, Mike Coyle, thank you for filling in again.
Oh, yeah, thank you.
He did like that black coffee, and I was like, oh, we had that whole conversation about how I buy really basic drinks at Starbucks. Mine are expensive and take a minute. And he's like, they just put the coffee into the cup and they're done. Mine's like, all right, that'll be 3 or 4 minutes for me to make your iced caramel macchiato. And I'm like, oh, it's delicious.
I became sort of real extra because I started drinking almond milk in mine.
Oh, you're one of those guys now.
I like when I'm at Starbucks, I like to add on that, you know, sprinkle of almond milk for 75 cents.
Today I got producer Ryan. We pay him in cappuccinos. He's got his cappuccino. So I picked him up a cappuccino tonight. And for the first time, I've never been asked this before. And they were like, would you like a pump of a flavor in there? And I was like, I don't know if he wants flavoring. I said, no, let's keep it boring. That's what I called it. I just don't, you know, they're not very sweet. I expect a cappuccino to be sweet. They're not sweet. They're kind of like bitter. It's my favorite. And so, I think do you like flavors? Cause I'll add one next time. He would like peppermint. I order peppermint mochas year round. Second, I've mentioned that before. That's what I get when I go there. Okay. I digress. Your wedding.
I like coffee. I like all forms of coffee except for black.
I had it at your wedding with your cake.
I did too because I was tired.
AF?
AF.
Those are my initials, AF. Good initials.
Mind blown. I didn't have anything for that. My mind just cleared. It was at ease. I just want to thank everybody who came out to our wedding and made it a success. I don't want to thank other people... Some people more than others. They all contributed in some way. I want to thank my new in-laws. You know, they paid for a wonderful wedding. All my groomsmen, you guys, were great and easygoing. And thank you for everything that all you've done. To my wonderful wife and her bridal party, you guys were great during the shower and during the wedding and everything. Very supportive. You know, I love all you guys. And there are just so many countless people who I can't thank enough for making it a smooth and wonderful wedding. So thank you for all that.
You're welcome. I was in the wedding party. He did thank us. I was a groomsman.
No, it's like you're like thanking me for thanking all of you. It's wonderful.
Oh, thank
you're
you.
You're the conduit of thanks.
Thank you.
That should be a magic card.
Thank
conduit
you.
Conduit of ruin, conduit of thanks.
Conduit of thanks. All right, well, if that ever comes out, we got to circle back to this episode and be like, we called it.
We called it.
God do it. Thanks.
All right, so what's on the agenda, you asked? After the wedding we're going to do some updates.
Wait. What's on the agenda today? We're just going to make producer Ryan do more work now. What's on the agenda today?
He's so mad. We got to get him more coffee.
We will.
Okay, so on today's podcast, we're going to go over what happened in Magic Fest Indy and the Mythic Championship qualifiers that accompanied it. Andy's going to go over Ravnica story updates. We're going to cover the new mechanics from Throne of Eldraine as they were spoiled, and then go over some of our favorite cards. And then we're going to play a game called Would You Rather?
More Would You Rather. We had fun last time, so we're gonna continue that. You're gonna see more of this in the future because we received a lot of good feedback on the Would You Rather last time because we were monsters.
Yours were gross. Just I hope they're not as gross this week.
They won't be much better, but they're not that bad. So Magic Fest Indy and the Mythic Championship qualifier. What is the scoop?
So it happened in Indianapolis. Let me bring up my notes.
Indianapolis
Magic Fest. Okay, so there's three MCQs on the weekend, but we'll kind of ignore the standard one for right now just because the standard is kind of irrelevant with, you know, rotation happening in 3 weeks. But so the Friday MCQ, I believe there was over 300 participants, and it was won by Anthony Michael Kilberry playing Burn.
Okay.
And there was in the top eight, there was 4 burn decks, 1 dredge, 1 spirit, 1 merfolk, and 1 fork hood Wurzo.
Interesting. So I've been hearing a lot about green white Eldrazi, but I didn't hear that in that list.
Yeah, that was
That's the Mythic Championship qualifier.
Yeah, okay. We'll get that in a little
okay,
bit. But,
okay.
Burn seems really well positioned in this kind of slowing down format because they don't really care about your 5/5 or 4/4 batter skull that you play. Just like bolt you, you're dead.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of burn in not only the MCQs but also the main event, and then there was a couple modern leagues on over the weekend on Moto and just filled with burn.
Well, they don't have to compete with like super fast. I mean, those were the fast decks, but
right,
there
yeah,
were other decks that were super fast. Now we don't have to deal with
yeah,
them
you're
anymore.
You're like turn two Hogak and you're like, okay, I lava spike you.
I just lose.
Right. Yeah. I'm going to spend 3 bolts to kill your Hogak that you can just recur. So,
burn is back and
burn is back.
It was always viable before. It was like, it just steals games out of nowhere. Like, well,
yeah.
I lost a burn in this last round.
Right. I mean, they literally have well over 7 unique spells that do the same thing. So it's just like count to 7 spells and you pretty much win.
Right.
So straightforward, but always if you're playing against a good solid burn opponent, it's hard to win.
It's also not an easy deck to play. You
yeah,
have to
people,
make a lot of really difficult decisions.
I know,
do I swing with my my 2/2, what is the 2/2 that has, they reveal the...
Goblin Guide?
Yeah.
Yep.
Do I swing with Goblin Guide or do I hold it back this turn?
Right.
I think in many cases you just swing with it, but I just like to turn cardboard sideways when I play Magic in Modern.
Correct. Yeah. And sometimes you just need to use your burn spells to kill Bolt a Bird. I mean, it's a basic play, but you know,
Bolt
there's
a Bird, that's a thing that people say. So
right.
I always know to do it. Don't let it live. I've been told that's an important thing to kill.
Yeah. Birds of Paradise cannot get out of hand. Otherwise, you are not going to be in for a good day. But we can... You want to just go to the main event or you want to go to the Sunday MCQ results?
No, do...
You want to do a chronological?
Sure.
Okay. So, there was over... It was a... The main event was Team Modern.
Mm-hmm.
Unified Modern. So, you could... Every team could had to play... In essence, a different deck, because they all share the same card pool, so nothing could overlap. Except basic lands, correct. So, let's see.
Is this the one that Allie Warfield, they came in the top?
Yep.
Did they take it first?
No, they got
fourth.
Yeah, they're top four, yeah. So, they're, with team events, there's no top 8, it's only top 4.
Okay.
But I'm not sure, I know the top 4 teams qualify. I don't, maybe top 8 qualifies as well. But I know for sure the top 4 teams qualify for the MCQs.
Okay.
Or I'm sorry, the Mythic Championship.
Sure.
So day 1, the most played deck was Burn, which made up, let's see, about 12% of the meta. And then Mono Green Tron was second, which if you've ever watched Burn play Mono Green, it's like, why are we playing this? Because Tron can't win.
No. Oh, it's
like,
that it's just too slow?
Yeah. Tron always has difficult time playing against hyper-aggressive decks like Zoo, Burn, and Infect. Because
mm-hmm.
they have no way of interacting.
I like Zoo. Sometimes I've won on turn 2. That was exciting.
And then, so let's, the top 5 were Burn, Mono Green, Jund, Wurza, and Titan Shift, actually.
Okay.
Moving on to day 2, the highest conversion was the top 5 decks were Burn, Wurza, Mono Green Tron, Titan Shift, and then Grixis Death Shadow.
Okay.
So Burn had a 15% conversion. Wurza actually had the highest percentage of conversion. It was 20%. But obviously a lesser stake.
I'm happy to hear it's not higher because I've been listening to a lot of folks talk about that and they were afraid that deck was just going to run away.
Wurza?
Yeah, because it didn't lose anything. And
it just
was better positioned moving forward.
Well, it's essentially you take the Thopter sort of the meat combo and then you add like Urza himself and
you're
it's
right.
Like, yeah, it's just like turbo now at this point.
Right.
But then it's moving on to the top 4. So it was actually won by a trio, obviously.
Right. Team Modern, 3 people.
Of, it was Muhammad Kadi, Joseph Karani, and Kevin Brown. which was, they had Wurza, Jeskai Stoneblade, and Burn.
Okay.
So.
Solid.
Yeah.
Stoneforge Mystic.
Stoneforge Mystic, and then he was also playing Geist of Sandshraft in the main. I think it was just a Prison of Clock against like the slower decks.
Spicy. I mean, it's exciting to see that card back in Modern.
Yeah, and
being played again, I guess.
Guess who's back?
Just not in blue white control, because I've seen that in blue white control before.
Right.
With the when they were swinging in with that and the Azor or and the Celestial Colonnades, when that was like the main strategy, that was a couple years ago. But
yeah, take 10.
It's rough.
Yeah. Let's see. And then Kevin Brown playing the stock burn list, and then Jeskai Stoneblade. They ended up playing against Joseph Bruno, Matthew Hoey, and Andrew Tendrum in the finals, who are actually Midwest Grinders. If you played anywhere locally, that's a big event. You probably heard some of those names. They're based out of Chicago. Joseph Bruno was playing Blue White Stoneblade, Matt Hoey was playing Cumans, and Andrew Tendrum was playing Burn. So there's a lot of, like I said, there's a lot of burn for this event.
You're
done. If this was Hell's Kitchen, Gordon Ramsay would be so mad at you. third place, we have Nick Roller playing John, James Moskow playing Urza Stoneforge, which is just the Urza combo with Stoneforge package. Kind of grind out a little bit better.
Does that just look for Sword of the Meat combo?
And it also has that ability. Yeah, you can find the Sword of the Meat.
Sure.
Yeah. And then Jonathan Zutt playing just Mono Green Tron.
Okay.
Fourth place, we have Chad Harney playing Wurza, John Hobbs playing Grixis Death Shadow, and then Ellie Warfield playing Green White Eldrazi.
So the professor just did a video on that deck.
Yeah.
And it seems really fun.
So it did gain a lot of buzz from over the weekend. I believe she put it on her Patreon with like a sideboard guide and stuff. It seems like a super fun deck because you either start with by beating down with like just Eldrazi,
mm-hmm.
or you can get Karn and search for like Mycosynth Lattice out of the sideboard.
I'm happy to see four Karn being played in Modern.
Yeah.
I didn't know if we were going to see four moving forward, and it looked like we weren't going to see Karn for a while. Right. But
nope, he's back.
We're going to see Karn.
Yeah. Or the third win option is Stoneforge Mystic.
It's all of them. Like, do you want this? Okay, go for it.
Yeah,
is that like, not working? Try this one.
This deck seems like the Three Stooges strategy. It's like, move it, stupid.
Oh, let's try this one out.
Yeah.
No, I like it a lot. But I particularly like that liquid metal coating in the sideboard is actually being used.
Yeah.
Like, it's the first card that she suggests to grab.
Right, yeah. Everybody expects Mycosynth Lattice, but no one expects Liquid Coated.
It's there if you can't get to the 6 mana.
Right, exactly.
But if you can get to the 6, obviously you want that, and then you just plus the card and hope it doesn't like get taken down.
Yeah.
But, you know, that deck seemed really fun.
Yeah, so moving on to the Sunday MCQ. This one was a little bit more diverse. It was actually won by Jund. Which is a deck that's close to my heart. But he beat Blue White Stoneblade in the finals.
Who won?
Oh, I'm sorry. You're right. Adrian Trogler won with Jund.
Okay.
And he's playing. So it seems like a lot of the Jund decks now are moving. They're just kind of accepting that the format's kind of grindy, so they're starting to play Tire List Trackers again. No Bob. Bob is
nowhere to be seen.
Yeah.
Bob didn't show up.
Yeah, he's replaced by Renin 6.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, pretty stock list nowadays. Except this one's on actually running Assassin's Trophy, which I thought was interesting. He's playing Abrupt Decay, Lightning Bolt, Fatal Push, and Maelstrom Pulses as removal.
I mean, isn't Abrupt Decay, like, people were removing that for Assassin's Trophy?
Yeah.
So he doesn't want them to have their land.
Right, well, that's, yeah. With Abrupt Decay, it's kind of just a concession to...
Is Abrupt Decay the one that can't be countered as well?
Can't be countered, destroys non-land permanent. Okay. Same C3 or less.
Yeah. Sure.
It's
value. Jund is value.
Jund is value. So the top 8 for that was... I had a Naya Zoo deck in there.
I play Naya Zoo.
Yeah. This one was playing Bowmat Courier. That's
I've seen that build before. It's less restrictive on your mana, like,
well, that's
to play
sure.
Bomat Courier and card advantage.
Yeah, who doesn't want card advantage in a red deck?
Well, my version's mostly green, but yeah, I agree.
Oh, okay, yeah.
I agree. I play the Revolt Zoo, so that's the... It requires me to have too many fetch lands, and I get really greedy with the mana, and I pretty much scoop to Blood Moon if I haven't taken them out before it falls.
All right. So the top eight for this was three different Stoneblade decks. There's two blue-white, one Jeskai. Surprisingly, only one burn in this one, then Niazu. John, Hardened Scales, and then Spirits.
Spirits. How do you feel about that new card that gives creatures of a chosen type you pick -3/-3 till end of turn?
I don't know. It seems good in theory, but I feel like if it's a late game top deck, it's not really going to do much against, like, you know, it's 7/7 Champion of the Parish or something.
Sure. I guess it's good against... I mean, it's kind of good against humans, and it's kind of good against spirits.
Yeah, it's a little bit better against spirits because they don't... Most of their time, they're not that large, but... humans,
I mean, you just got to spell queller it, right?
Yeah. Oh, good old spell queller. He's making a comeback.
I like spell queller. I kept mine in when I played that format that was once existing called Frontier. Do you remember that? It was like popular for like
5 minutes.
Yeah, it was like a whole month and a half. I played it. It was really fun. I played the card that Insole Artifact, the giant scissors, and I would put it on... I would just put it on lands and things and swing it with the giant scissors, and it did really well.
Screw rock, paper, scissors. I got Insole Artifact.
Insole Artifact was very good in that because I really liked it.
You just equip your own with that. They're like Ruh-Roh or Darksteel Citadel.
Anyway, modern.
Modern, yeah. What a fun format. Anyway, let's keep it modern by talking about Ravnica story updates.
That's not modern. I guess it's modern.
Modern era.
Modern day.
Modern today.
Modern today.
Modern problems. Modern solutions.
Yeah. So you can find the Ravnica War of the Spark prequel stories online. They're still actually being released. So
nice.
Chapter 15 actually came out today. And it's really a prequel to the story because... The War of the Spark novel, obviously there's going to be spoilers today. So if you haven't read any of this or you don't want to know any of it, like, skip ahead.
No spoilers in this dojo, sir.
Yeah. they are still coming out. I think it was chapter 15 came out today. But it's telling you the story of what the guilds were up to leading up to War of the Spark. Because the War of the Spark set was what we talked about when we talked about the State of Design article was that it was an event set, so it was all about just the actual event of Nicobola showing up and trying to take over Ravnica. And so this story is telling you what happened to the guild leading up to find out how certain people got in place in the guilds, how everything had changed since the last time we saw them in the Return to Ravnica block. And it is written by Django Wexler, and so we're gonna do this kind of like in two or three parts because I'm not gonna take like an hour to do it. We'll do like three bits. So I'll do a little bit this week, I'll do a little next week, and then we'll finish it up the week after that.
Is there a chapter where it's just like Nicobola sitting in a robe by a fire drinking out of a goblet, just some wine chilling?
No, but I feel like in the War of the Spark novel there were like three sentence chapters, and it'd be like, so and so was upset, next chapter. Like, they were like, there was one that was like not even half a page. There were a lot of chapters, but some were very, very short. There's actually a video on YouTube you can find of a very lighthearted joke like summary of the War of the Spark novel. I can't remember who made that, but I do remember liking that, so you can go check that out online. But so the actual prequel story start out, so it's story time now. So
story time.
I kind of just took rough notes of the first few chapters, so we're going to go over the first four chapters. So it starts out with an update on Rael'Zarek, who's walking through the siege of an abandoned neighborhood. And at the time he was doing this, there was a Dimir Thought Stealer who was trying to break into Nivix, which is the Izzet League's headquarters. So Rail wasn't there at the time that the young girl was attempting to break in. He was just like doing other things. Doesn't really say why, but he was. So he stumbles upon an abandoned theater and runs into Tezzeret. So you know, Tezzeret's kind of a bad guy. Kind of is a bad guy. And so they have words.
What type of words?
They like...
Chicanery?
Shenanigans. They were just like, you know, tough guy stuff. And so Tezzeret like leaves and is like, fight these constructs. And then there's like these things that start charging at Rail. And he takes them down and he's like, I feel like this was like not supposed to actually kill me because this is really easy to beat these guys. So I wonder why he brought me here. And he was like, oh, it was a diversion. This is a distraction. So flashback to Nivix, and the girl breaks in and she's sneaking around, and Niv-Mizzet, you know, the dragon who's in charge of the Izzet, is like sleeping. And so it appears she's being controlled in a way. So she's not there alone. And it appears that there's like another mind with her. And, the mission was actually to plant a secret into Niv-Mizzet's mind instead of like steal information. So you would think that they were there, a thought stealer, to take information, but they were like, oh, Niv-Mizzet's probably too smart for that. He's got, you know, a way to stop us. So instead of doing that, they decided to plant something in his mind. What it is, we actually still don't know. Hmm. So she completes her task and the other mind is like, all right, thanks for helping me. I'm going to leave, but before I leave, I'm going to force your body to walk into a trap. And so she walks in, like the girl walks into this area and then she gets caught and then this other like mind leaves. So anyway, Niv-Mizzet is like super paranoid and has lots of traps and she gets caught physically. And, so Rail was like, I feel like something's wrong. So he like rushes back and, he gets upstairs and Niv-Mizzet was like, so this person like tried to break in and she's over there and she stopped and she was like all kind of just frozen. And so Rail was, trying to not give up too much information. And Niv-Mizzet was like, yeah, I know you're a planeswalker. He was like, what? Huh? And Niv-Mizzet was like, I've been here for 10,000 years. How do you really think that I don't know things? And so, he basically said, Niv-Mizzet said he's trying to become more powerful and he needs Rail to unite the guilds. Cause after the, guild pact was broken, all the guilds were kind of just like feuding and no one wanted to actually like get along. And Jace left at the end of the Return to Ravnica block. He left and he was supposed to be the living guild pact and he was supposed to keep everything in order, but he left. So anyway, so Niv-Mizzet was like, but in case my plan fails, he gives him plans for a project called Project Lightning Bug. And he was like, this is basically a beacon that we're going to turn on. And in case anything goes to shit, we're going to turn this on and have a bunch of planeswalkers come to Ravnica. Okay. So that was that. Now we get to see what's going on with the Golgari. So Jared, Golgari Lichlord, is still in charge. Wait, you have a question?
This is your favorite guild. Well, at least favorite color scheme, right?
No, I like playing blue-white, honestly, in Commander. But I do like the story of Golgari because Vraska was the first planeswalker I opened, so it is near and dear.
Yeah, there you go.
So you catch up with Jared, and he's like sitting on his throne, chatting with Storov Deverkin Lich, who's another card. So a lot of these cards were printed just now.
Right.
Anyway, Jared ordered like his throne room sealed, and there's a troll who like breaks in, and Vraska walks in. Vraska walks in with Mazurek, who's the also has a legendary card, Kral Death Priest. They walk in and they were like, we're gonna take over. And Jared was like, you can't just break in. Like,
it can only be Jared.
And so he was like, I could have your head for like breaking into my throne room and like messing things up. And she was like, try me.
Ooh.
And so,
oh no, he didn't.
So he orders two people to try to kill Vraska and Mazurek. And Vraska just turns the guy to stone. And then Mazurek casts a spell and kills the other person. And Jared was like, huh? I can't believe they didn't stop you.
Like a big question mark over his head, like in Metal Gear Solid.
Super confused. So then he goes, well, how do you expect this to end? And she goes, with you begging to live. And she punches him in the nose. That I didn't understand.
Boop.
Why.
Hey, boop.
She punched him in the nose. His nose starts bleeding. And so he orders.
Wait, isn't he a zombie?
He's an elf. He's not a zombie. Oh, is he a zombie elf? He might be both.
I think he's a zombie elf.
So anyway, his right hand woman is Storov Deverkin Lich. And so he goes, Storov, I need you to help me because obviously she's trying to take over. And so Vraska, you hear her think to herself, well, if Bolas was right, no one's going to stop me.
Right.
So obviously Bolas knows things, and she's been working with him and is like, you can take over pretty easily. So Jared yells for everybody to kill her, essentially, so he can keep his throne. And no one comes to his aid. They just stand there. And they were like, yeah, your time of reign is over. And he was like, what? And so anyway, also, Vraska had this like weird Crowl thing with her. It was like a bug who is albino. Crowl is a type of Golgari like bug minion thing. That's
a berg.
Yes. And it was an albino one that has telepathic powers, which, you know, I feel like it was just in the story, just...
Why does in every fantasy novel like an albino do something cool?
Right? There was one in X-Men, right? The one that in the movie where when you're around her, you lose all your powers, right? She was like...
It was the third one.
The third one.
Yeah. Who was
that? I don't remember.
Keep going.
Anyway.
I think.
Here's so,
the topic.
Vraska punches Jared, and no one comes to his aid. And so... Vraska goes, well, I need you to get information from this guy. So the Crowl, who can read minds, goes over and steals all of his information. His contacts on the surface, all of his passwords, all of his meeting places with the guilds.
Identity theft is no joke, Andy.
Yeah, for real. The Golgari are all about that. And so they read his mind, take all of his information, and then Vraska turns him to stone. So Jared is no more. He gone. And so...
No, he's just a stone statue.
So... after that, we meet up with the Orzhov and Kaya, the ghost assassin planeswalker, who we've met a long time ago. She is there. She was contracted by Bolas to set Taysa free. So you find out that Taysa is being held captive.
Yeah, Her grandfather
didn't like that she was trying to take the Orzhov in a different direction than it was before. She was like, well, if we start working with the other guilds, like we might get more and like we might be more powerful. And he was like, yeah, no, that's not going to happen.
No.
So basically, he kind of has her trapped. And so... she's there and Kaya finds her. And while they're talking, they kind of get cut off. A couple of guards were approaching and Kaya had to like go invisible and walk away. And Taysa was like, wow, I wonder who that is.
Wow.
And so that was really all we heard from the Orzhov.
Given the Owen Wilson. Wow.
So back to Rael's mission. He goes to the Azorius to meet with Esperia, who's the Sphinx in charge of the Azorius, and Aurelia, who's in charge of the Boros. They were like, They're still friends. They're on good terms, like law and order. They're together. Bum, bum. And Dovenbaan was also there.
You made a reference to Law and Order, didn't you?
Dovenbaan was also there. Don't know why, but Dovin's there now. He is, spoiler alert, a bad guy. So
why everybody bad guy?
I know, right? So he's there with Esperia, and she's like, this is my right-hand man, Dovin. So they start talking, and... they're trying to find a way to unite the guild, and to make Niv-Mizzet the living embodiment of the guild pact, ensuring they would have a way to fight Bolas, because he explains this dragon from another world is trying to come here. And Esperia and Aurelia were like, for real? We've heard about this, but like, we don't think this is real. And Dovenbaan steps out of like the shadows and is like, it's real. I've met him. I've seen him. And so Esperia was like, well, it's probably a good idea to get the guilds together for a guild summit. That's a card. And Dovenbaan mentions that Jace was alive on Kaladesh, because Esperia was all, well, I think Jace might be dead, because like, he hasn't been back. And Dovin's like, nope, he's not. He just hasn't been back here. I saw him. So anyway, Esperia basically says, we'll show up, and Aurelia from the Boro says, well, we'll come, but we have to figure out ways to get everyone else together. Rael, that's pretty much your job. Like, we'll show up, but we're going to make you do all the work. So Rael leaves, and he gets like almost back to where he's supposed to be going, and he gets like this really like busy courtyard, and some young girl goes, you need to go sit over there. He goes, what? And then the girl disappears. So he goes, sits on this bench, and someone starts talking to him and says, I know all these things that you need to know. And there are like spies. There's a lot of problems. And he goes to turn around, and she goes, don't turn around. It was very cliche. So it was Lavinia. Lavinia's like, I left the Azorius. And he was like, but I thought you were in like a good position there. And she goes, yeah, there was too much bad stuff going on. And people were questioning whether or not I was doing the right thing by uncovering a bunch of problems within my own guild. So I just decided to leave. And now I'm rogue and I'm just trying to help Ravnica. So she basically says, as soon as I find out stuff, I'll send it over to you. So then we find Rael at home with Tomek. So Tomek is actually his boyfriend. Rael, Tomek, Distinguished Abacus, the mono white card that has like stuff lands that wrecks lands and stuff, and he has flying for some reason.
Right.
I mean, it looks
lands
like
and
it,
flyings,
it lands and flyings. So anyway, they're talking about their days, but they don't talk about guild stuff because they're in two different guilds. One's Orzhov, one's Rael.
Don't want to mix business with pleasure.
You don't. So
makes sense to me.
Rael they eat dinner and talk and then they go to bed, and Rael has a flashback dream to when he was 17 years old. So this is where it gets like weird. So Rael's having this dream and he's working for some rich guy who treats him like crap and then has him beat up. And so Rael gets helped up by this guy who's super nice, who wants to offer Rael a job, but he says it might be for things that society doesn't like or what the rich would not agree with. Would you help me out? And Rael was like, sure, I guess. Cause like cause at the time he was 17, didn't have a ton of money, was just trying to make it. And so he said, sure. So the guy was tall, and it says that he was tall and he had gray hair that was pulled back. He was a really nice guy. Who do you think this person is? Just out of curiosity.
If I had to guess, it would be the inspiration from the Journey song. And he was the born and raised in South Detroit.
No, it was not inspiration from Journey. It was Nicol Bolas.
What?
I didn't understand it. Obviously,
the scaly man dragon.
I'm assuming he was doing something with like mind control magic or something to offer that. So he introduced himself as Nicol Bolas. So that's where we meet Nicol Bolas, right? So Rael wakes up. Rael wakes up with a pounding
Freudian slip. Please excuse us, audience.
Right, with a pounding on the door, and there's a messenger with a note that was like, "The Dimir want to talk to you because they want to change their leadership. You need to go meet them in this alley." It's like, what? And they said, "But you need to do it before the sun comes up. So you need to go now."
Nothing ever happens good in an alley.
Nothing happens good in alleys. So he gets to this alley and finds out that Dimir thought stealer who. Flashback, who was breaking into Nyrix,
no.
is dead.
Dead. That's not where I thought that was going.
Yeah.
I thought it was going to be part of that alley.
No. Wow. Well, she was there, but dead. And recently, because there was like lots of blood dripping. Lots of blood.
Drip, drip, drip.
And so she's dead, and then Lazav appears. And Lazav's like, yeah, she turned on us, and she needed to go. We also want the person that is physically trapped in Niv-Mizzet's clutches back as well, because she didn't do that on her own. This person like took her mind and like stole it and this weird stuff. And I would like at least my thought stealer back. Can you get her back? Rael was like, okay. So, Lazav basically says someone infiltrated the Dimir and he'll show up to the summit because he already knew about it because they have secrets everywhere. They have spies everywhere. So
007.
He said he'll show up, but he will be attending under a disguise. But he lets Rael know it will be me, but it won't look like me. So
the plot thickens.
And then Rael goes, "How can I trust you?" And he goes, "You shouldn't," and then leaves.
You shouldn't trust me, I'll be in a disguise.
Right. So finally back to Golgari, Vraska's in charge. She moves the throne from where Jerad had it in the Rot Farm. She moves it back to Svagoth. The Relentless Tomb. She's like, no, I don't like this. We're gonna go back to where I had it before, or where
I like the drapes in this room more.
Yeah. This room's much better. This one's much better. So in the first few days there, I guess a few people tried to assassinate her, but none could. But then apparently Izoni, Thousand Eyed, was the last of like the
Thousand
no,
one
no
of Thousand Eyes.
No, kind of like the team that was Team Jared. shows up with a knife. He brings a knife to a Gorgon fight. And, I mean, for real.
Can we talk about that for a
second? Can
we talk
about that for a second? You think that your knife's going to beat a Gorgon, right?
Right.
She's going to turn you to stone. So anyway, I guess Izoni was the most powerful of the Dev Karin left. Those are like the dark elves. And he wanted to take the swarm back. Didn't happen. Vraska had her zombie minions drag Izoni into like position. Basically, that was what she was doing. She was having the zombies like pull, like hold people up, and then she would just like look into their eyes and turn them into stone. So Izoni is fighting really hard to not get turned to stone. And at the last second, she does turn him to stone, but he pulls his arm. I don't know why this happened. Pulls his arm and she turns him to stone while he's waving at her. Fairly
makes the presidential wave before he goes.
Like a big high five. Yeah. So anyway, it made Vraska real angry. So
to get a high five.
She did not like that he got free and that's how his statue ended up looking. Oh. So she kicks his arm off. So now he just has one arm.
He looks like a Greek statue nowadays.
Yeah, right. So anyway, then the telepath, that telepathic bug, starts talking to Vraska and is all, what's wrong? And she goes, I don't know. I feel like something's wrong. And he goes, well, I did look into your mind. And she was like, you're not supposed to do that. I told you not to. And he says, well, I didn't mean to, but I just kind of like grazed off your thoughts. Like it just like bounced off. I just lightly saw them.
I touch your shoulder and stuff happens.
And he goes, there's something missing like from your memory. So a long time ago back in the Ixalan block.
Oh no.
When she was friends with Jace and she was like a good old pirate and was. Yeah. Full Pirates of the Caribbean. Mm-hmm. She was working for Nicol Bolas, obviously like she is now. Mm-hmm. And she told Jace. It was when Jace and her had like a love connection. Like the show Love Connection. And that was a show, right? That was the show? The Match Game is all those shows,
love,
right?
Love Potion number 9.
Yeah, that works sure, too. Yeah. So she says, well, I need to go back. And Jace, back in Ixalan, basically says, yeah, but Nicol Bolas is going to kill you because he knows that you told me stuff and he knows that I know stuff and this is not going to work out. And he goes, I can just take those memories away and I'll give you them back when I come to Ravnica in the future, right? So she's here and we're in the present now and she because this is a prequel to the War of the Spark, she hasn't gotten her memories back. So they're missing. So this bug is all, your memories are missing. I can unlock them for you. And she goes, well, I wonder why. I would never have agreed to let someone lock my memories, but she doesn't remember. Obviously, her memories have been stolen.
This bug has an agenda.
It feels like it.
I'd like to know what that agenda is.
And they
is.
Named
Please.
It, I believe it's like Xenix or something. And I feel like if you name a character, they're important enough that they're going to do something in the future. Yeah. So basically, as Xenix says, oh, well, I can unlock it. And she goes, okay, fine. So all of her memories come back and she goes, oh, I was doing the right thing. I can't believe what I've just done. Well,
oopsie.
I know what I'm supposed to do now.
No take backs.
And then the story just lastly, it circles back to Rael. He takes counts of all the guilds that would be in attendance. And at this point, everybody's going to attend except for the Orzhov because they actually said no. The Gruul because no one invited them yet because I don't know if we really want them to come. I mean, they need to come, but they haven't invited them yet because they're all nasty
crazy.
and crazy and they're not really nice people. And then the Selesnya because they asked for a meeting. So that's where we're at right now. We'll have more story update next week. But this was leading up to the war. So we're kind of, I mean, if you've read the book, you know, I mean, if you've seen even any of the cards in the set, you know how it turns out. But it's interesting to see what had happened to lead to this.
What had happened was.
So that's where we're at with story updates.
So when we do updates in the future, can you sound like Luis from Ant-Man when he does the recaps?
Oh, that'd be really good.
Okay, so I was with wine tasting with my cousin Ernesto, and it was mainly reds, and you know how I don't like reds, but there was this rosé that was delightful.
I will see if I can write some notes in a different way. There's no way I can be that funny.
That is like any recap should just have Michael Pena do that character. It's so great.
But that I know that we're talking about War of the Spark and it feels like it was so long ago that set came out.
Well, yeah, there's just been so much of them, like Modern Horizons, Corset, Commander. It's just.
And then Throne of Eldraine now. And now yep. Brawl's coming out. And then we got the four sets for next year, which we're going. I mean, it's been information overload and spoiler crazy. Yeah. But Throne of Eldraine, we're just going to touch base on Throne
of
Eldraine. It's off the hook. That set's really cool. I like the flavor. I think the cards are very strong. I don't know. I don't necessarily think they're being pushed. I think a few are. I think Will and Rowan, like the Royal Scions, I think that card's going to be great in Standard.
I did not... You're going to be very proud of me because I looked this up. I didn't know that they shared a spark.
I know. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. That's
so you won't crazy. Find them. You won't find them alone. They'll either all be. They'll yeah. be in a plane together. They can't.
Yeah. It's kind of like Ren. He can't. He has to have a physical embodiment.
He has to have a host.
Host.
A host. What, yeah. Tree folk. Poor tree folk.
Poor Groot.
Oh, poor six. Wonder what happened to 1 through 5.
Wait. What happens if we go this 7, 8, 9?
7, 8, 9.
Ooh, kindergarten throwback.
So Throne of Eldraine, we've seen some more spoilers. Any specific notable cards you want to chat about?
Lochmere Serpent.
Okay, why is that? Okay, so what is that? And
it's based off the Loch Ness Monster.
Okay.
Have you ever seen South Park?
Not all of them, but yes. Who killed Kenny?
Are you
right? That's familiar? That's the one who dies. Kenny dies in like yeah. all the episodes.
Are you familiar with the Loch Ness Monster moment episode?
Absolutely.
The 350.
I'm not.
350. Okay. How many activated abilities does Lochmere Serpent have?
3.
And then how many words are there in total?
Is that why everybody's talking about there being 50 words on the card?
Yeah, it's tree fitty.
Tree fitty.
Yeah, I thought that was awesome. Every time somebody...
Did anybody confirm that this was related?
I just... I don't know.
But we'll have to like go to...
There's no way that's coincidence.
We'll have to go to Blogatog, right? I mean, right. Mark yeah. Rosar is going to have to answer that. Yeah. Unless someone got really... Really smart and was able to throw that many specific words.
Probably. I mean, R&D is...
That's really great.
They're hilarious. Anyway, well, I'll talk about the card since I'm so excited about it.
Okay.
So it's a creature type serpent, Lochmere Serpent. It costs 4, a blue and a black, so 6 CMC. Has flash. Then it has blue, sacrifice an island. Lochmere Serpent can't be blocked this turn. 1 black, sacrifice a swamp. You gain 1 life and draw a card. Then blue and a black, exile 5 target cards from an opponent's library, return Lochmere Serpent from your graveyard to your hand. Activate this ability only anytime you could cast a sorcery. That's a 7/7.
It reminds me of Purloik Ancient.
Yeah, like Purloik Ancient, Aetherling, Morphling, all those kind of... It has a way to either defend itself from like removal or recursion, and then also his card advantage.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a great control deck finisher for sure.
Absolutely. I think one that was spoiled yesterday, I like Outlaw's Merriment. It reminds me a lot of Assemble the Legion, but not necessarily Assemble. So it's 1 red, white, white for an enchantment that has at the beginning of your upkeep. Choose one of these at random. You either create a red and white creature token with one of these characteristics. So it's random, which is kind of cool, but at the same time, it feels like you're just going to get value no matter what. So at random, you either create a 3/1 human warrior with trample and haste, a 2/1 human cleric with lifelink and haste, or a 1/2 human rogue that has haste. And when this creature enters the battlefield, it deals 1 damage to any target. It feels really good. Like it's a card that Boros needs in Commander. I feel like it's probably going to be decent. I mean, it's not expensive. It's a 4 CMC card.
Right, which is technically cheaper than Assemble the Legion.
And I feel like all these tokens are actually useful. Like, none of them particularly bad. I mean, I would prefer to get the Human Warrior or the Cleric. Like, the Rogue, the 1/2 with haste that deals 1 damage. I don't know how relevant that is, as I'm looking at a lot of these cards, at least from this set.
Have a lot of rogues, right?
Well, there's not a ton of creatures with 1 toughness. I mean, as I scroll through this... Most are 2, but there's a lot of big creatures. I mean, there's a 7/7, a 4/4, a 7/6, an 8/8. I mean, there's so many big things. I don't know how relevant this is right now.
Yeah.
And how Standard's going to look. But from what I can see with the future Standard event that's on Arena right now, doesn't look like there's many 1/1s sitting out there.
Hmm.
So I think that was one of the cards that I thought was unique that was just recently spoiled.
I like a card that was just spoiled today, this morning, actually. It's three. It's a triple black legendary creature. Ayara, first of Lock Twain.
Okay, Lock Twain.
Sounds like a rapper name. That's great. Anyway, whenever Ayara, first of Lockwain, or another black creature enters the battlefield under your control, each opponent loses one life and you gain one life. Then it has tap, sacrifice another black creature, draw a card. And it's a 2/3. I mean, that's just black at its core.
I think it's great.
Yeah. Card advantage and grave, you know, Mike Coyle might want that for his Gravecrawler decks.
Yes. We were talking about it. He plays a She-Ray deck, and unfortunately, it's not one power. But I feel like it could just go in it, and
yeah,
it'd still be fine.
I mean, you sacrifice any creature in that deck, and it
pretty recurs much, any creature.
Yeah.
I also like the a card that was spoiled today as well, Harmonious Archon. How do you pronounce that? Archon.
Arcan-do.
4 white for a 4/5 flyer that has non-Archon creatures have base power and toughness 3/3. And when it enters the battlefield, create 2/1/1 white human creature tokens. So you are paying 6 mana for 10 power. And one of them is a 4/5 flyer.
Correct.
I feel like this is very valuable.
Yeah. Do you think that's a commander good enough to be a commander on its own, or does it go into something?
Well, it's not legendary, so it can't be. But
good point.
It could be played in commander. I think so. Yeah. I have a Cigar to Humans deck. I think that it would really like this card.
Oh, yeah. It makes all your humans base 3/3.
Power
3/3
three instead of 1/1.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. And it makes other humans.
Yeah.
So.
Card that was really interesting to me was Feasting Troll King, which is 2 colorless and then 4 green, so 6 CMC. It's a Troll Noble. That sounds like Chernobyl. Troll Noble. If you slur it, Chernobyl. It has Vigilance and Trample, then when it enters the battlefield, you create 3 food tokens.
Nom nom.
No.
Munch.
I'm a little bit behind. Is that just, is it pay 2, sacrifice it, gain 3 life? Is that what a food token is?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. And then you sacrifice 3 foods, return Feasting Troll King from your graveyard to the battlefield. Activate only once per, only during your turn, and it's a 7/6. So that's pretty good recursion.
Talk about the mono blue legendary creature, the Emry Lurker of the Lock. This is the card Brian texts me. He goes, I want to talk about this card. I love this card.
This card, well, first off, I'm going to be putting this into my side, Master Thopter CDH deck, like, immediately. There's, like, no question about that.
Sure.
Emery, what's her card name? Full card name? Lurker of the Lock. Yeah, you said that. Not paying attention. Too happy about this card. It's a legendary Merfolk Wizard, and it's a 1/2. When it enters, this spell costs 1 less to cast for each artifact you control. So, I mean, if you play any blue EDH deck with artifacts, they're going to cost 1 blue, realistically. When it enters the battlefield, put the top 4 cards of your library into your graveyard, and then tap it, choose target artifact in your graveyard, and you may cast it this turn.
So I've seen a few cards that combo with this just to make infinite mana pretty quickly. Like, one of them is a let me pull up the card real quick. So we were talking about this earlier in a group chat, and Mirren Spy is a 1/3 flyer that costs 2 and a blue that says whenever you cast an artifact spell, you may untap target creature.
Oh, okay.
So with Emry Lurker of the Lock, you can tap her to cast an artifact card from my graveyard, and then you can cast any artifact, and if you have a free artifact, it untaps her for free. So if you play like a Mox Amber, you can tap sack it, or just tap it for a blue, and then but the one that I saw earlier and is Lion's Eye Diamond, because you can tap sack it for 3 mana of any one color, and then then it just goes infinite with whatever you want.
Yeah,
obviously I'm sure there's going to be other ways to break this card, but it's bonkers. It's really good.
Oh, yeah, you get the Cast Mistress Bauble literally every turn.
Is it just every turn, or can you do it multiple times on one turn?
Either or. I just think that's cool. You can cast, you know, Mistress Bauble potentially on somebody else's turn.
Yeah, no, I agree. And we saw the mechanics that came out in this set. So we have adventures. So adventures are on the like the new version of a split card. It's a creature that goes on an adventure and then comes back after the adventure is over. So basically, Beanstalk Giant is one example. So it is a star creature for 6 and a green, but it can go on an adventure. You pay 2 and a green, search your library for a basic land, put it onto the battlefield and shuffle your library. And then you set your creature into exile, but there's like an extra special token that you can get that just says this creature's on an adventure. And you basically put it on the on an adventure pile. And so from its adventure, you can then cast the creature for its creature cost. But you can only cast it from that if it went on an adventure. If someone exiled it from your hand,
doesn't count.
It did not go on an adventure.
Sir, can't go on an adventure.
It cannot come back.
Nope.
So adventure, I think, is a cool mechanic. It's a new play on split cards. I like split cards. I like having two different things I can do on a single card.
Yeah, and also fits the
theme.
The fairy tale theme, very, you know,
yes.
Grim fairy tale.
The next mechanic is adamant.
Are you adamant about that?
I'm adamant that this is the mechanic. And so this mechanic specifically cares about color that you spent on the card. So they said that there are 5 different factions on Eldraine, like kind of kingdoms. And so each color is going to see the mechanic adamant. And the mechanic itself specifically says if you spent at least X number of a color mana, so the card... Embereth Paladin is 3 in a red for a 4/1 haste, and it says adamant, if at least 3 red mana was spent when you cast this spell, put a 1/1 counter on this creature. So it cares about multiple of a single color being cast on it.
Yeah.
I think that's it's a unique mechanic, causes you to think about how you're going to tap your mana before you play all your spells.
Yep.
Because usually you only have to worry about the one single color, but if you want 3 to be this, or it reminds me of those cards that was like 2 colorless and a blue, but then it would say something like if you spent green mana to cast this, you can do this, but if you also spent black mana, you can. It was like there were like 3 color cards a long time. I forget what set that was, but there's a few of those.
Well, they were hybrid cards. It was the Shards of No.
But isn't hybrid mana, you can pay either or? These had multiple, and it...
They had it... hang on. They had it in Dissension, because they did it with, like...
They did. There was...
Yeah, what was that card that...
A hasty one, and it's if you paid green mana for this, it also gets something. I know there's one of those.
Oh, yeah. Why am I blanking on this now? I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, it reminds me of that.
Yeah.
But... it cares about just one specific color instead of 2.
Right. Unlike a card like Fire Spout, where it says, you know, if you tap green, it, you know, deals this to two flyers. And then if you spend red, it does it to non-flyers.
Right. Right. And then the last, the third mechanic is food. So food was added, out of left field. People were like, how's this an artifact? And, I mean, I guess you would have to create a new subtype of token.
Yeah.
So we're just gonna make it an artifact.
Yeah,
which has pay 2, tap, sacrifice this artifact, gain 3 life. I still personally would prefer a clue token because you can draw a card off of it. But we haven't seen the whole set. I mean, right now, I believe we haven't even seen half of Throne of Eldraine. So
yeah, I'm wondering if they're gonna do lands like temples or something, or dual lands of some sort.
That care about food? I'm thinking for this mechanic, I want to see some more stuff that really wants to outvalue.
I mean, like the Troll King, stuff like that's like little mini mechanics.
Brian, let's play some Would You Rather.
My body is ready.
Okay, so this is for pre-release specifically. So at a pre-release, would you rather be guaranteed that you open the most expensive card in the set in foil, but have a terrible card pool for like the rest of what you opened? Or would you rather open super bonkers cards that are pretty good and they help you win, but they're like there's almost absolutely no value. They're just good in limited formats.
I'd rather be good at limited, so I'd rather just get like bombs and stuff.
I can think I'd rather have fun, but I think the question of whether or not you make your money back is always something that a lot of people keep in mind. They want to go and open some really splashy card.
Yeah, I mean, it's like the Las Vegas top eight where the guy took the Tarmogoyf over like the whatever spell that was actually good for his deck, and there's that controversy.
Value drafting? I know. Yeah. I think in this case, this one was a toss-up because I almost feel like at a pre-release, I've gone undefeated two times during Khans of Tarkir, and I went undefeated during War of the Spark, but only because I opened up two cards that specifically were just really good. I mean, I played the Abzan mechanic of Outlast, which was really good and limited, and then I opened up a God Eternal Oketra in War of the Spark, which is like the best card in that set, limited. So I feel like otherwise, I generally go like 2-2 or 1-3. So I kind of feel like I would pick the value card here. I don't know. I think that's just me. If I'm guaranteed to open the most expensive card in the set in foil, I don't mind. I still feel like that's a win for the pre-release.
Fair enough. Yeah. I'd rather be good at, I shouldn't say be good, but I would rather have cards that benefit my limited deck so I can open packs.
That was my other thought. Like, what if you open really good cards and you go undefeated and you open like 20 packs cards, and then you could get that same card in foil.
Exactly. Boom. Logic defeated.
But I also really like opening packs of cards too. So this one was really hard. All right.
That was
We can't agree.
Okay. Okay. So this one is a little bit more related to working at a card shop, but would you rather sort 25 rows or live with someone who didn't care about your cards at all?
I would rather
wait. The five rows are a complete mess.
Well, I've sorted cards for your shop before,
cards for you too.
Correct. And then one time I sorted cards and you dropped the box on the floor.
I know. I was so mad. I saw it in slow motion.
I spent like 5 hours sorting this one box that was a hot mess, and I hand it to Brian and it slips out of his hands, and he looks at the floor and goes, "Well, guess you can come back next week." And I was like, dude, I'm not sorting this again next week. There's no way.
Stay tuned.
It still hasn't. Has that been sorted?
No, that's all been gone through now.
Oh, good. Okay. Yeah. I would.
Actually, shout out to Del Para for doing that for us.
I would. I don't know. I like having a partner that does care about the cards. So I guess I would sort through cards. I don't mind sorting, but that's a lot of rows. 25
times
that's,
5.
That's like days. That's so long.
That's like a million rows. The math checks out.
It's a million rows.
Don't double
25
check
rows is a million rows. That's what it feels like. Okay. Would you rather? Okay. So this isn't a game of Magic. And I don't know. Maybe one game. What? Okay. Let's do forever. Would you rather never be able to draw extra cards or never be able to tutor?
God, what are you, Josh Lee Kwai?
This was actually user submitted, so thank you, Ryan Pollux, for submitting this question.
Oh,
this would you rather?
Of course, it would be Ryan. He would ask a question like that.
I would rather not tutor because I know that I like to draw cards. Even if I like to draw cards and I still lose. I draw cards all the time and still lose. So I would want to draw. I don't care that much about tutoring.
I guess I want something specific, so I'd probably rather tutor all the time.
Really? You'd always tutor and never have extra draw spells?
Yeah. Drawing cards, I wouldn't say it's overrated, but it's not specific enough for me.
Okay.
So.
I know this was answered earlier, so guest host Mike Coyle said he would always want a tutor because he spent too much money on his expensive tutors to not use them.
Yeah, his like 47 copies of Vampire.
He's got an Imperial Seal, so I mean, there's that.
Oh, that's true.
That's an expensive card, even in the Judge promo. So he wants to use his tutors. Totally fair.
Fair enough. Okay. Would you rather be? We're gonna go to Ravnica for a little bit. Just this question.
So okay. Really. Okay.
Would you rather be a Gruul Rioter or a Boros Private?
Boros Private.
Really?
Yeah.
You don't want to be part of chaos?
I don't think so.
Anarchy?
No, I think I'd want to live in the city, but I don't know. I feel like if I was a private in the Boros, I'd probably be treated pretty well.
Probably.
I don't know.
I mean, they have like the little short little goblin guy, the Legion loyalist.
I feel like life might be really boring though in the Boros.
Maybe it's probably just all.
I mean, they do get to go out to the bar at night. Everybody gets together after that, so it's probably like a normal 9-to-5 job.
I think I personally would rather be a gruel rioter. You don't have anywhere to be. You just punch each other in the face and stomp around and stomp the ground.
Stomp the grounds.
Yeah.
Do you have another one?
You want me to go next?
Yeah, I only had two.
Would you rather be? What would you rather if you were part of R&D? Would you rather want to focus on a theme, designing a theme, or designing a mechanic, new mechanic, and or a new theme?
New mechanic or a new theme? But new mechanics could come with a new theme.
It's true. But you can only have one or the other.
I think theme.
Theme?
I think so. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I like the theme of Throne of Eldraine. I like the whole fairy tale. I think I like that.
I think though I like the overall arcing story more than like a specific mechanic, because you can, you know.
I think if I was a more competitive player, I might have picked mechanic so I could make something that fits with my play style. Right. But I think I just like to play Commander more than anything. And so I like to have more mechanics than specific mechanics.
Really?
I think so.
Okay.
Just more.
You'd rather draw a card than have a specific card with tutor, but you'd have a specific theme.
I'd rather have a specific theme over a specific mechanic. I think so. Yeah.
All right. I dig it. Yang and yang.
I think that's how...
Rowan and Will.
I think that's how... R&D comes up with new sets. People have specifically asked for things like the Egyptian theme, and then we got Amonkhet. Or they asked, I mean, I know people are still asking for a pirate theme. So
Viking.
No. They were asking for pirates. We got Ixalan. No, they were asking for like a cowboy plane, like an Old West type plane, which I'm pretty sure is just going to be Angrath. Because I think that's Angrath.
Probably. Do you have an idea? You don't have any.
I don't have any more. Let me think if I can think of one.
Would you rather live on Myrdan before it was besieged, or after? Maybe we'll go dark with this one.
Ooh.
Live on Myrdan after it's been besieged and taken over by the Phyrexians, or live in the desert on Amonkhet. Yeah.
Probably Myrdan, because Amonkhet looks really hot and I do not like the heat at all. I don't care if it's dry heat or humid heat. Florida and Arizona is still hot.
You don't like nosebleeds?
It's still really hot. I just don't like... I like being up here in the north. I like the winter way more than the summer. I love the snow. I feel like Amonkhet would be really hot. So I'm going to pick Myrdan before the besieged.
Okay. All right. Okay.
It could probably get hot on Myrdan, but I'm gonna pretend like it's not.
So yeah, you know, there's a couple, several different climates. So
okay. I'll go to the chili climate.
Chili cook off.
How about you?
Myrdan.
Yeah.
Because I was like, that was my first block that I played that was like competitive. So.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's a little biased, but...
I think yours is very biased. That's okay.
Whatever. Confirmation bias. I don't care.
All right, one more.
Would you rather be putting your bias aside for your very first Planeswalker that you open? Would you rather be Vraska or Jace? For a day.
Be Vraska or Jace?
Yeah.
All right. I've said this before. I feel like if I had superpowers, I feel like I'd be a bad guy. I really do. I don't know if I'd use my powers for good. I feel like I'd probably be Vraska. And that's completely putting my biases aside. I feel like if someone did something wrong, I'd be like, no, you're gonna turn to stone. I am the law.
Okay, Judge Dredd, calm down. Judge Judy.
Judge Judy. I'm tapping my watch. My wristwatch, tapping the table, tapping my watch. Hurry up or you turn to stone.
I just saw a meme the other day. It says, it's not my place to judge people, but then also me. And it's like pointing to herself as Judge Judy. I can relate to that in so many levels.
And you?
I'd probably also be Vreska because I would want like laser stone vision too.
Oh, so cool.
Yeah. Jace is kind of... I'm also kind of over Jace, like all the magic fanboys out there.
I would want to read someone else's mind because I'd be afraid they said something bad about me. And I care a lot about what people think of me, probably way too much. But I would be really... I'd probably be super upset if I found out someone was thinking something bad about me.
You said, what about my feet?
He said, what? So I wouldn't want to be able to... I've even talked about this before. I wouldn't want to be able to read someone's mind. If I was given a superpower and they said, you get no superpower or you could read someone's mind, I'd probably take it, but I would not be happy. I wouldn't be happy. I'd be like, man, I got gypped. I got the worst superpower.
Or the best superpower.
Maybe.
I don't know. What is the best superhero power, you think? Just one, if it was only one.
I would want to be able... I've had this conversation. I want to be Nightcrawler so I can poof and teleport.
No,
teleport.
It's Bamf.
Bamf. Bamf. Yeah, I want to teleport. I want to go on vacation. Bamf.
Bamf. Alright. I'd probably just want thick skin. Like Thanos.
Like people can insult you and you just have thick skin, or well, like people can punch you.
Well, I meant like physically like thick skin, like, you know, I can't be cut or anything. Like I just like
Thanos has that?
Yeah.
Did they talk about that in the movies?
Yeah, I remember he's like all that for ounce, just a drop of blood.
Really?
When he fought Tony Stark? Yeah, why do you think like when he couldn't really
I must
be a
have just missed a
what,
lot of those a lot I
why do you think he could it took Stormbreaker to, you know, pierce his skin?
I feel like I miss a lot of minute details in movies that you always
wait,
catch.
Wait. Like just like Thor missed his head, he should have went for the head. You missed that? Missed that detail?
I didn't realize that was a thing.
Yeah.
Wow. I'm thinking about this all differently now.
did I just
blew my mind.
I'm Jace. Blew your mind.
Well, I think that's it for today. If you want to contact us, you can find us on Twitter. You can find me at @ATFlory.
And me at @BallerManCometh.
Take a look for hashtag Guardian Project Pod on Twitter to find our posts and episodes.
Wait,
we do have one more thing. Off the agenda.
Off the agenda. We apologize. This was kind of a little secret, but I had my, at the time when I asked her to do it, fiance, but now wife, Angela, draw up a little picture of what she think of magic cards. She knows nothing about magic.
Nothing.
I gave
at all.
Her literally nothing about this except for a name, and we're gonna take a picture and show you guys what she drew.
Yeah, we asked her to draw what she thinks this card would look like.
So we asked her to draw Liliana Dreadhorde General. Now,
that's
if you know
all...
anything about magic, you know probably would know what that card looks like. She doesn't, and she sketched this in about 5 minutes.
And you gave her
no details.
Just the name.
Yep, she didn't even look it up. She drew what she thought it looked like.
All right, so head over to Twitter. We'll have that posted tonight. And I mean, it's pretty good. I mean, she gave her pockets on the dress. I mean, it's pretty cool.
And what woman doesn't want pockets on her dress?
I've heard that women really like pockets. I heard that they don't have enough or big enough pockets, and I think we take pockets for granted.
Every time Angela gets a dress with pockets, she has to like pull them out like she's a hobo and show me in the insides of it. I got no change, governor.
So Liliana and her pockets will be on Twitter later.
Yep.
We like to hear from all of you, so send along your comments. We're excited to share this with you. And let us know if there's any topics you want us to talk about. We'll address them on the next episode. You can email us at guardianprojectpod@gmail.com, and I think that's it. So we will see you all next week.
I'm back, baby.
Goodbye.
Bye. I'm so excited to show people what this looks like. Look at my girl's art. She draw good.
That was a
long episode. I wonder how many times I said like during the Ravnica story updates. I tried to not say like.